what you learn on the battlefield is that to feel fear, it's fine. And instead of run away, you need to accept it and feel comfortable to be uncomfortable, if it makes sense. And more of that, fear is not indicator that it's bad. Fear is indicator that it's very important. The same with aggression. A lot of people, especially in the Western world, they learn that being aggressive, it's bad. You should hide your aggression. You should press it down. You shouldn't express it. But actually, aggression, it's a huge source of energy. Without the social layer, games become super toxic, especially towards girls. The problem, toxicity, is outside of gaming. It's a general problem that not really into game dynamics. It's about social engineering more and psychology. We actually talk about this a lot, that like the way how we curate teams together can be used a lot for like curate teams at work. But gaming market is much bigger than HR market. So we stay in gaming.
You're staying in the game. Can we translate your insights from gaming into building more inclusive businesses? Maybe people want to transform their industry if it is, for example, well, very male-dominated or toxic towards a specific group of people, or that's something that they want to implement within their companies.
I really like the thing that we talked with you before the podcast, that people kind of afraid what they don't understand. I'm personally encouraged, like everyone, you know, if you're doing something good, if you're doing something important, show it off. It is not for yourself, not to brag it on it, but to create this circle of goodness and encourage other people also to do it. Wow, that's deep.
Looking for smart stats about leadership and personal development? Then sorry, this show is not for you. On The Genius Leadership, we share relatable stories of real people and give you practical tools for personal and professional development so that you can start implementing them right away. I'm your host, Anna Lieben, Mindshifter, helping leaders get from reacting to creating. And Genius Leadership is about elevating humanity, one person at a time. Let's go. Dana, warmest welcome to the Genius Leadership Podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to this conversation because I know I'll learn a lot. And I'm sure that my listeners, genius leaders, will also get a lot of aha moments from your experiences. So to begin with experiences, tell us, who is Dana and what do we need to understand from your background, whether it's culturally, family-wise, professionally, education-wise, whatever you want to name so that we understand you better for the context of the conversation we're about to have.
Of course. So first of all, very important information about me. I'm Ukrainian and I'm also ex-military and war veteran in Ukraine. When I was 18, I served as a paramedic on the front line. Then I've been working on businesses and startup, finishing my MBA and entrepreneurship program at Stanford. I'm also tutoring and teaching in different accelerators right now. I'm CEO and founder of a couple companies. One of them become top 100 companies in Ukraine. Another one, it's a gaming startup that I'm working right now. So I'm fully dedicated to gaming and to create safe environment for every gamers. I think the recent one is I get into 30 under 30 in gaming in Europe, which is a big achievement for our company.
Yay, congrats for that.
Thank you very much. Mentoring and lecture in business schools. So we'll be happy to be helpful for whoever startup will find my knowledge and my experience relevant.
Fantastic. There's so much to tap into and I have so many questions to your experience. So first of all, 18-year-old, you, beginning of the war in Ukraine, and you go as a paramedic. First of all, do you need to have a medical education to do that? Or do you get some crash course there on like preparing for going to the front line? And tell us about that decision.
So the decision was based on my pure heart and intuition. It wasn't a logical decision at all. It was sometimes you just know that this is the right thing to do. And that was for me. When people ask me, why did you went? I don't have an answer. I just couldn't stay. I went through a couple months of training, but when you get in real battlefield, everything feels very different. And your training don't really help you that much because a lot of things you just learn on your way. And it definitely was a great school of surviving and resistance. And I cannot say that I highly recommend it to everyone, but this experience teaches you a lot of skills that are very important for any entrepreneur and anyone who wants to work with the startups and businesses. It teaches you how to work under high pressure and under high stress, make fast decisions, and probably make you more tough as a person.
So how are you using, or like, how do you actually manage the stress and work under the high pressure now when you're the founder or co-founder of a startup? What have you learned there? Maybe some practical tools that our genius leaders can start applying without going through the whole hell of being in the war and on the front line.
I think there's a lot. Like the first rule, it's kind of a joke, but not like a joke. The first thing that we've been taught when we just go to serve is like to not lose your team members. And it's funny because that's pretty much what good CEO would have to do, like take care of your team members. I think HR, it's a big part of any CEO work. But very important thing and very practical one is about how to deal with your fear. We naturally have fear and we naturally like evolve to avoid it and kind of escape or run away from what scares you. But what you learn on the battlefield is that to feel fear, it's fine. And instead of run away, you need to accept it and feel comfortable to be uncomfortable, if it makes sense. And more of that, fear is not indicator that it's bad. Fear is indicator that it's very important. So for example, when you're doing public speaking, when you're facing some challenge or problem, fear is more indicator that like you need to mobilize right now. You need to be very focused, very present, and perform. So that's not like you can decide what to do with this. And it just unlocks tons of energy and tons of resources inside you that you can channel to deal with the problem. Or of course you can run away, but we entrepreneurs, we don't do that.
No, I actually like how one entrepreneur was a second guest on my show. So it was like one of the very first episodes. He said that entrepreneurs are quite privileged because they are usually inherently optimistic. Otherwise, they wouldn't end up being entrepreneurs. And that means that entrepreneurs are usually surrounded by optimists because they're surrounded by other entrepreneurs. So it's a very unusual situation if you look at the general population. So yeah, we don't run away from fears. We usually face them, or sometimes we try to hide from them. But it's a kind of a love-hate relationship, I would say.
I had this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine who asked like, oh, so like, are you the smartest from like your friends? And I'm like, I think I'm the dumbest one because I was dumb enough to try. You know, I was like naive enough to like dare to try. Like, so like smart people, they usually like very careful, but you need to be a little bit bold and a little bit kind of over optimistic to go for it.
I love it. I also say that sometimes about me and my husband, because people are like, oh, you're so brave moving countries with a 5-week old. I'm like, yeah, we're not brave, we're stupid, but we've done it. So it's like you just learn from your experiences. All right. But I love those two learnings that you took from your time as a paramedic. First one is about the value of the team and the importance of that. And I'd love to uncover that a bit more and go deeper on how you're doing that as the CEO right now in GameTree, or maybe in the previous companies that you've built. But also this other one about the reframe or mind shift about the fear, that it's not a signal to run away. It's more a signal that there's something important and let's just dive into that. And I love how you said that really can generate a lot of energy when you think about it. Like, my emotions right now show me that this is important. So I love it. I know from experience how powerful this mind shift can be. So thank you for mentioning that.
The same with aggression. A lot of people, especially in the Western world, they learn that being aggressive, it's bad. You should hide your aggression. You should press it down. You shouldn't express it. But actually, aggression, it's a huge source of energy. If you will look at this from a different angle, like, or even like envy, when you feel that, oh, somebody has something that I want, it's not necessarily a bad feeling. It's just very like huge amount of energy that you can realize and then channel to actually build something or destroy something that not serve for your goals. Either way, it's not necessarily bad. It's not that simple. Just good or bad, black and white. No.
I usually try to refrain from those kind of positive, negative emotion labels because it's all feedback. And I really try to teach my clients that whatever emotion you get, take it as a data point. I know that you like data and then you love using it. Yeah. And that's what I teach my clients. Like, okay, anger, data. Let's look at that. Like, what does this data tell us? Don't judge yourself on getting this emotion. Let's look into it. And that really gives them permission to start exploring it instead of trying to suppress it because it's just labeled in the society as the bad emotion or negative one. So I love that you mentioned that as well.
And the same with like laziness, you know, a lot of people label lazy as like, I'm lazy. How to motivate myself? It doesn't work this way. Like you cannot externally motivate yourself. It's internal. Like you probably don't have something internal that like make you passionate or like, you know, laziness. It's not like, oh, I'm just lazy. It's your subconscious understanding that it's not important. I don't want to waste my time on this. I don't even want to do this. Like, why would you, you know, do tomorrow or like just force yourself to do something that you don't see much point to do at all? Like, just don't do it.
Or it could be the avoidance of discomfort, which some psychologists say that we are beings not caught pleasure seeking, but discomfort avoiding. So, and I'm still not fully kind of committed to this idea because like in the interview where I heard about that, they were like, how about sex? This is like pleasure seeking. Like, no, it's when you have the sexual arousal, the horniness, you're trying to avoid discomfort of that feeling in your body. And that's why you go into sexual intercourse. And I'm like, nah,
that's an interesting idea.
I don't fully like agree to it to 100%, but there is a lot in that sometimes our laziness is also about this. I really want that goal, but I know how hard it will be to get there and uncomfortable it will be. So I'd rather stay on the sofa and watch Netflix. So yeah, but I agree with you that motivation is not what we should be seeking and it's not the external thing. We shouldn't rely on it.
But it's interesting that you mention because like, right now, loneliness, it's such a big epidemic. There was done a lot of research about this, and they show that youngest generation, like our generation, is the most lonely generation in the human history. And nowadays, people spend twice as much time talking with everyone online versus talking with people in real life, which is mind-blowing. And the way how people interact with each other change a lot. And like, loneliness, it's very internal feeling. It's not that much external. So you can be surrounded with people or like talking with everybody every single day, but still feel lonely and disconnected. And that's partly what brings me into gaming in general. Because like, when I get back from war, I felt very lonely and very depressed. And I had my PTSD and I barely like go outside of my apartment for like almost a year. I stay at home and just like play games. And I noticed how much game changed. And it used to be that you play with your, I know, classmates or your friends, your favorite guilds and stuff like that. You went to online clubs playing with your neighbors and stuff like this. And after I get back from war, games change. It's a lot of like people play with randoms. And without the social layer, games become super toxic, especially towards girls. And for me, it was instead of finding safe communities and safe environment, I felt even more isolated and faced more toxicity than in real life.
Can you explain a bit more, why is it especially towards girls? And I saw some statistics in the materials preparing for the interview with you that it was like 71% of female gamers hide their gender to avoid the harassment and things like that.
Yeah, and like even nicknames that girls pick in the games and like I pick in the games, it's like general neutral because you don't want to like show and reveal that you're a girl in the game. And you try to avoid use mic and you hide your gender because suddenly the whole game become that you are a girl, not about the game anymore by itself. Why? I think there was done one very funny experiment when they took professional esport players and they make voiceover and change their voice from men to girls. And then they measure like comments and level of toxicity. And the same players, when they have voice, like girls' voice over, face it like much, much, much unproportionally higher level of toxicity because of woman voice. And it's because, I can't say people toxic, people not toxic. It's just like easier to pick, you know, like it's easier to say, oh, she's a girl, or a lot of gamers not have very well developed social skills. And the biggest thing that we doing is trying to fix the toxicity in the games, make games more safe and inclusive to everyone. And we don't believe an idea that gamers like just bad people, or we don't believe that gamers just like toxic to each other. We think that problem is more sophisticated, and the same person for one can be very toxic and the same person for another can be not toxic. And it's all about like social layer on top of games. The problem toxicity is outside of gaming. It's a general problem that not really into game dynamics. It's about social engineering more and psychology.
It goes back to the societal issues that we have that I discussed previously on the show, that we're saying as women in the equality discussion that men are toxic, men are privileged, they should like understand their privilege and so on. But they're privileged in some ways, but they're so robbed in the others. For example, in the permission to feel their feelings and express them and so on and so forth. So we're, as a society, feeding those toxic narratives. And then they're not helping anyone. So how do you actually work with that in Game Tree? What are you doing to make it more inclusive and a safer space for all gamers?
I know it's funny when in real life, all my friends are gamers, like, okay, 99% of them. And you look at them, you talk with them, and you're like, such a lovely people. And then who all these jerks online?
They're friends with each other, you know, like it's just two different worlds.
And then you met like all these gamers and they're so nice and kind and lovely and love animals and do a lot of charity. But like then you went playing and there's just so many toxicity and you're like, how does it even work? And we actually spend thousands of hours watching people play together and like studying toxicity and studying social dynamics, groups, social engineering and all of it. And we run this big study to show the main reason of toxicity. And very, very often, it's not people really try to be toxic to each other. It's clashes of personalities, clashes of interest, clashes of values, cultural clashes between people, and also gamer style, something that like studio do not really consider to, that, for example, one person can be very competitive and another can be very casual, and they will not have a good experience with each other because casual gamer will be like, oh, we're here to have fun. We're here to, you know, spend our time. And competitive gamers will be like, no, we're here to win. You know, try hard enough. Like what you're doing, God, like, and it's just naturally going to create a conflict, even though there's not supposed to be a conflict at all. So in our mind, it's not people genuinely bad. It's more like wrong people play together. So the way how we see the problem is to curate people based on their psychology. We create and develop probably like one of the most legit, scientifically accurate psychology test. So we actually have AI model that analyze you as a gamer and analyze your game behavior and like type you. We use Jungian typology for that. It's a little bit like we frame it a little bit similar to Myers-Briggs, even though it is different, but not going to go so deep into details. If you want, I can share with you a little bit more our nerdy things. But we understand gamers very well, and we understand the relationship very well. And I think we are the only one company in general in gaming market who focusing on gamers' relationship. And it's crazy because there's 1.3 billion gamers playing online games, and it's more than $200 billion industry. And there's no companies who working on understanding and curating gamers' relationship between each other, which is mind-blowing.
Fascinating. So how are you working with that? Once you have matched gamers that they start playing together, hopefully they're enjoying the experience. But if there is any toxicity, are you anyhow punishing people, or is it just community-led that they just drive that?
We do have a couple layers on that. So we do have algorithm that moderate, and we able to predict toxicity in advance before it happens. We also have moderators on the platform. And something that we're doing with different gaming company, we looking in the gamer behavior inside the game. So it's not always, even when somebody report another gamers, it's not necessary like you should just ban a gamer. And I think a lot of gamers like face that. Microsoft just like a couple months ago banned about like couple million profiles. And I don't think that couple millions people just genuinely bad people. I think there's much deeper problem. And for example, League of Legends, which is well known as one of the most toxic games, the best solution, they have like the whole department working on toxicity. And the best solution that they come up with is just not allow user to communicate, to use mic. And we're like, really? This is the best what you can do over here? Maybe there is something wrong with this idea. And there is something wrong with this idea. If you match with somebody randomly, you don't really care. Like, think about it. It's much easier to blame your teammate that you lose the game, or like say, oh, you toxic, I'm going to report you and stuff like that, versus actually collaborate. And we think that it's because social layer is missing. If you play with random people every single time, you know that we see each other first and last time in our life, you're missing the social component. And that's what we're solving. If you have community, if it's not random person, but I know you before the game, I talk with you before the game, we have friends in common. You're not just random nickname in the middle of internet. I saw what other people you're talking with. I saw what other games you play. You're a real human being. This like personalization and community layer. We have somebody in common. You will have, you know, like a future. Like we're going to see each other again. Like we are in the same communities. And it's adding this tribal layer that we're missing. And this make gaming experience better. So one of our main slogans, it's find your tribe, which covers a lot. First of all, it's your tribe. It's group of people that you feel accepted, that you fit in, that exactly like you. And second, because it's your tribe, you're more thoughtful about them and you're going to have better experience, and you're not going to just disappear. You're not going to play with like different people. You're going to play pretty much with the people who you already had a good experience with. So you become part of this like community, small group, and it's much natural way for human being to work with each other. We're not evolved to be in the middle of like millions people online and nicknames and randoms. It's not how human being evolved. We evolved to live and survive in tribes with like real human beings, like not big global civilization. We
anonymous.
Especially anonymous, especially anonymity adds whole new problems to already very complicated issue.
Very curious, how do you predict toxicity? So how do you identify it before it happens? And I'm asking because I could imagine that those insights of yours can easily be translated into any business as work culture and workplace environment. So yes. Sharing the insights there.
We actually talk about this a lot, that like the way how we curate teams together can be used a lot for like curate teams at work. But gaming market is much bigger than HR market. So we stay in gaming.
You're staying in the game.
Yeah, but I'll be happy to talk about this deeper. So for example, one of the things that we discovered that you will have genuinely bad experience if you, A, not able to accept somebody on personal layer. So some type of personalities will just have a natural conflict because they operate, like physically, they operate in their different language, like brain functions, kind of. So for example, somebody super logical, somebody super emotional and things like that. But that's not a biggest issue. The biggest issue is when people cannot accept each other values. Some values can be very opposite. And very often our enemies, it's not somebody who very different from us, but somebody who very different on values level from us. The way how we're choosing our friends is very different from the way how we're choosing our partners, because like if you look in the dating apps, what is important? How somebody looks and, you know, the distance. Pretty much that's all information that dating apps give to you. But how do you choose your friends? It's not based on the appearance. So it's based on what? Usually it's somebody who has similar values to me. So clashes of values can create a huge conflict. And also we kind of very tribal people. And inside the tribe, it's the same as inside the family. Everybody kind of have signed their social role. So somebody is leading, somebody on support. Sometimes they change the position. Somebody's, you know, take the role of guilty one and stuff like that. So very often, if people both have very similar player style, they can fight for the same spot in the tribe, and that's also going to create a conflict. So there's no like one simple answer, but basically by analyzing tons of data and analyzing tons of gamer plays, we able to find the patterns that going to create potential conflicts.
It's so fascinating.
It is indeed fascinating.
I love this idea of looking at the clash of values, because I see that with my client work. When they come to me and they're like boiling, you know, and just come this emoji from my head, or when the head is exploding and there's kind of fumes coming out, this is what sometimes we have to deal with in my sessions. And then I usually ask them like, okay, so which value is endangered right now or threatened right now? Or where do you feel like it's like you're not seen? Yeah, where do you feel attacked? And I do the same for myself when I'm like super pissed. I was given this example on the podcast recently. It's been a lot that I'm triggered by the drivers here in Iceland. They somehow don't look at the pedestrians and bikers. And I would just be always like fuming, biking or walking, because I feel like ignored. And then it's like, what is threatened? And of course, like, you can go on a kind of superficial level that I don't feel safe, which is one thing, which is already could be enough. But then I thought about it like, I really value seeing people. And here I feel like I'm not seen.
It's like existential.
Yeah, it becomes this, like I'm not seen as a person, as a human being.
Wow, that's deep.
And just that understanding helped me calm down and actually be less of a bitch towards drivers when I'm out. And that really can help us looking at those values. But for that, we need to understand what our values are.
That's why we developed like value tests inside the app that we did not reveal it on your profile. So for example, we have gamer DNA test, which shows your gamer player style. We have personality type test that we show on your profile, both of them. And then we have value tests that actually we do not reveal, that very much on the back end, but it's very important for algorithm to understand you. And we have this internal joke that we know our user better than they know themselves.
I bet.
Well, people in general, not that good to know themselves because we're biased. We don't want to see our weaknesses. We try to think about ourselves better than we are and, like, you know, create excuse. There's this phrase that I really like, that we judge ourselves based on our intention and we judge others based on their actions. Because you know that, like, oh, I didn't mean it. But then, like, other people, you assume sometimes the worst. But again, if it's not random person, if it's your friend, they also have this benefit of doubts, because you also can assume that, oh, like, he's not a jerk. He's just, like, I don't know, tired. Or, like, you know, the same message you could read in a different way. And sometimes you can read it and be like, oh, why he's mad on me? But if you know a person, you just, like, oh, that's just the way how he communicates. You don't assume the worst about the person. And that's very often what's going on in the game as well. People just, like, it's perspective. It's all perspective. It's all subjective.
And tell us about the experience. Like, how has the platform really changed the gaming experience for people? And just give us some numbers. How old is Game Tree? Or, like, how much have you been on the app market? And then it was 700,000 downloads, right?
Right now it's about 8 already. We slowly coming to 1 mil. We've been around for like 3.5 years so far. And that was a lot of work done. We change our algorithm a lot. We're constantly still working on improving users' experience. And honestly, like, every single day I can share with you and, like, show you some testimonials. Like, sometimes you, like, oh, it's been such a hard journey. It's never stopping process. And it feels like you're trying to do impossible job, but then you receive these messages and testimonials. They're like, hey, I met my best friend. And, like, hey guys, you met me, feel like people that I never thought I will have in my life. And one guy texts us, if I wouldn't find people in this app, I don't think I will be safe. And you understand how big impact it has. And then once on the GamesCon, I met a girl and she was like, oh, so what you working on? And I'm like, oh, there's this app, Game Tree. And she goes like, no way, I met my husband here. And I'm like, what?
So cool.
Yeah, it's so cool because, well, in the end of the day, people need people. That's something that I tell very often. We're not solo creature. We're very, you know, interconnected, very social, and we need each other. And it can be games, it can be sport, which actually sport also kind of game. So
with all those experiences of building something more inclusive for diverse range of users, what could you suggest as experiences or some learnings to take for business leaders in other industries? So can we translate your insights from gaming into building more inclusive businesses? Maybe people want to transform their industry if it is, for example, well, very male-dominated or toxic towards a specific group of people, or that's something that they want to implement within their companies.
I really like the thing that, you know, we talked with you before the podcast, that people kind of afraid what they don't understand. And I guess there's no one simple solution because each specific industry is very different. But I can say specifically about gaming, that gaming can be a game changer for a whole society. Because unlike in real world, when you enter the game, nothing else is matter. Like you can live any possible life. You can have any possible superpower and can be anyone. And it's truly amazing how people who don't have the same benefits from society online, they can be equal with everyone. And we should create the safe space for everyone to express themselves and be accepted. And in the end of the day, it's all about to find your people, to find that group of people that you wouldn't feed together. You feed with each other, you know, like you're clicking with your, like, imperfections. I think in any industry, it's applicable. Instead of try to find like perfect candidates, looking for people who cover each other on perfectness.
A lot of people say like, I am trying to hire for my weaknesses, right? And that's a bit of that. Yeah. You need to have a self-awareness for that, to know what your weaknesses are. Have humility to actually say like, yeah, this is my weakness. And I'm searching for someone who has the strength in that area so that we can help each other. And actually,
this team is going to be much more powerful if they complement each other. But at the same time, again, they have similar values and similar view on the world. So they can have very different kind of personalities. They can have very different set of skills. They can think about solution in a very different way. So some people more intuitive, some people more data driven, some people better with the strategy, some people better with tactics. And it's best for everyone to have very diversified way of thinking about problems, but values and the way how we're seeing the world and the way how we see what's good for society should be pretty much in the same direction. I don't know, should I mention it or not? But for example, we Ukrainian company, and but like I'm Ukrainian veteran, we do not hire Russia because I know that regardless of the background, sooner or later, it's going to create some internal conflicts. Or, for example, we work on toxicity in games. We hiring people who are highly passionate about games. That's what's going to unite them. And very often in our team buildings, people just play Dota together. And like, you know, this is the best experience that you can have. Like when somebody just share with you your passion and see the world in the same view, and like, a lot of us being rejected by world as jerks or nerds or something like that. So let's just be there together.
I wonder how, would they have any suggestions on the style or like player style? You said that sometimes people want the other to win. They're very competitive. The others are there for fun. I directly thought about our board games with my husband's family. Around Christmas time, his mom is very aesthetic. So if we play Carcassonne, like, or whatever, all the cards need to be faced the right way so that it becomes a beautifully aesthetic picture. And she gets upset, like, not in a like drama way, but she gets a bit upset or like triggered that someone puts the card the other way around or something like that. And we just make fun of that together, you know, and like, oh, it's a fun thing. But that's the thing, like we found a way of making it light and not toxic between ourselves. So I wonder if we try to translate this into the work experiences, people will inevitably work with in teams with others who have different style, gaming style. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Work style.
Work style, exactly. So do you completely avoid matching people if they have different styles, or how is that working?
So, for example, how do we use gamer DNA for games, and then how you can use the same kind of approach for work? So we use it to recommend to which game you should play with this person. So let's say what we measure is like, how much do you like strategy versus how much do you like challenge? How much do you like aesthetic? How much do you like storytelling? And things like that. How much is important for you to express yourself? There is like a lot of things we measure. And then based on this, we like, hey, this is the game that you're probably going to enjoy a lot because it has very high aesthetic, it has low challenge, it has very beautiful story and stuff like that. So I think it's very, in a work way, your job position should match with your work style, first of all, and then you will feel in the right place. You'll have pleasure of working on this. So it's not just to like match with a group, but also that you would have great experience working. You have pleasure and you will feel that this job fits what I'm expecting it to be. Again, it's a lot of self-reflection. People usually do not have that much. That's why we do it for them. Like, you cannot know yourself, it's fine. We will know you, we'll tell you everything, it's all right.
Gosh, I do think you need to go in the HR. I know, I understand your decision of staying in gaming, but I mean, using your tests and algorithms to help people get better hires and better jobs. And by better, I mean really a better match to their personality, their preferences, and so on. That would be just a game changer for the whole world.
It could be also the same. We're looking into sport market, for example, because if you will think about like professional sportsmen, professional athletes, if you will apply to predict who, like which team gonna perform better, which player gonna play how, it's very interesting market as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, but also for personal development, like we're using quite different approach from everybody else by looking deeper into who you are and knowing gamers very deep. And also it benefits Game Studio too, because if user have generally better experience in the game, they will more likely be back. They have better stickiness. They spend more time because they have more fun and they go back. Not just for games, but mostly for other people to talk with them, to spend better time, because suddenly from like meaningless escape, it's become a place where you feel like, you know, you have meaningful relationship, and relationship is even it's probably as important as health or even more important than health.
Oh. The Harvard happiness study has shown that good relationships or quality relationships both positively affect our health and our longevity. So it's absolutely, there is a relation there.
For sure.
Dana, what have you learned from building this inclusive platform? Were there any surprising challenges for you in the process, or was everything as you built as in your hypothesis from the very beginning?
We started from a very different angle. We started from being discovery app. We wanted to help people discover the best games for them, discover, you know, the best book for them. And we started from a very different angle, but then like naturally market put us more towards the direction that we're working on. And we wanted originally recommend you things also based on like your personality. Individually for you. So for example, like, oh, which next book I should read, which next movie I should watch, which next game I should play, because world getting bigger and it's very often you spend more time choosing the movie versus watching the movie by itself. And you're like, okay, it's ridiculous. So we started from that part. But then again, we saw this huge need on market and we saw that gamers actually struggle to find other people to play. And it's not about games by itself, more than about people to people. So we slightly moved towards matching gamers and build communities. And now we also like, we see market kind of push us to become a social network for gamers, because so far there's none. And it's much needed, because as a gamer, you don't really have a place to go to talk with like-minded people. Yeah, you have Discord, but Discord, it's a chat app. They don't really have the social layer. So this is the direction where we're going.
How come there is nothing like that? This really surprises me. It surprises me that there is no social network for gamers.
Yeah, everybody thought that Discord gonna go there. That's why I guess a lot of there wasn't enough movement towards that. But Discord board members actually said that they're gonna move outside of gaming and they're gonna move towards just general chat, like more like Telegram and Slack and stuff like that, which probably makes sense for them, but it's also leave a big space on the market for a company like GameTree to become this app. And I think the biggest problem with social network is that nobody wants to use a social platform that nobody use. And the way how GameTree works, like you naturally come there to find friends. So you naturally, organically already over some time have friends on the platform. So you just keep using it.
You create the network effect naturally or and organically.
Another part of it, what I've learned is, again, from the start, I honestly thought that like, oh, like we need to find a way just to like ban toxic gamers, to identify and just like block them forever and ever. And then I discovered that people not genuinely bad. There's very few people who like objectively bad. And what I perceive as bad behavior for somebody is fun. So for example, I have a good friend of mine who's professionally a sport player, and he goes like, yeah, like shit talking, it's part of gaming. That's what makes it fun. And I'm like, what? And like, I see swearing as a toxic behavior, but for somebody, it's totally normal. So it's all about how do we feel inside versus how it's actually like, you know, is. And it's all about right match and right connection and right dynamic inside the group.
I want to roll back to what you were saying earlier, or like early in the conversation, about one of the learnings from your time in the army about not losing your teammates. And I would like to know, how are you using that right now? So how are you building a team where you as a CEO are actually taking care of them? How do you nurture that? What does it mean in practice on a daily level?
So in army, as a paramedic, it was your main job to take care of everyone inside the team and like physically make them secure. I think in the company, it's more make them emotionally secure. When war started, it also was kind of physically secure too. We spend a lot of time to rescue and help people to move out from like Kharkiv and Zaporizhia and, you know, places where that was very high dangerous. Even Kiev was not the safe space at that point. But mostly it's make people feel secure that they will not, if they will do something wrong, you will communicate it clearly, like clear communication, that you will not do something unexpected or you will not surprise them, that everybody's on the same page about clear vision, where are we going? And also we have, there's controversial opinion about this, but we practice it in our company. We have two questionnaires that we regularly send to our employees. One is open one, so non-anonymous, and one is anonymous, where we, non-anonymous, we ask you, what is your career goal? Is it changed after the last time we ask you? Where do you want to be? Do you feel comfortable with your salary? Do you feel comfortable with your position? Do you want to evolve somewhere? Do you want to have somebody under you? Do you feel comfortable with task and stuff like that? And on anonymous, we're asking pretty much closer questions, but also feedback about each other in the team to know on different ways. So we ask, what do you think about communication skill of this person? What do you think about professional skill of this person? What do you think about problem solving? What do you think about leadership? And then by having this information, you can create objective picture, what's going on inside the team. And we do not use this information to threat somebody to say like, oh, you was a like bad boy. We use it to show like, hey, look, team gave you feedback that your communication skills should be improved, how we can help you with that. And just by saying that, they're like, hey, your like team said your communication skills should be better. Just that fact, the person would be aware of that feedback, make him more conscious and just not punishing people for their mistakes, but give them security. I think that's a big part of creating healthy environment inside the company. Another one, we are a very horizontal company, like pretty much, I think it's fair about any startups. In our case, it's also the same. We do not have very strong hierarchy. Everybody can reach me with any suggestion. And we have team meetings when literally everyone from senior, junior developer can bring idea how he want to improve the processes, and we'll discuss it and we'll implement if it makes sense. A lot of changes, a lot of the way how company works right now comes from employees. We give employee share options, which is also pretty common in Western startup world. So if you work, you deserve to have ownership in the company.
I want to ask you about the surveys. How often do you send those out, and what is the response rate there?
So almost everybody fulfill them. They're not obligatory, so they're more like, but people need the space to talk. So you need to, you know, you need to give them opportunity to express themselves. Something that super frustrates employees is lack of power and lack of opportunity or ability to change something that frustrates you. So for example, there's one problem if you just like have something that frustrates you. Another one, if you do not have a space to come or you don't have a person to come and express it and somebody gonna do something with it. So we're empowering our employee, like, look, you have a problem with something. This is a safe place to come and say this. You're not gonna get punished for, like, even if you don't like me and my, like, I also receive feedback about myself. Sometimes it's very good to like see what like, yeah, it is 100% anonymous. So I don't know who answered it, but like it's refreshing to see that, oh, probably I should be better on this one a little bit. I should pay more attention on this one. And it's not like just, oh, is it good or bad? It's more like give a scale from 1 to 10, like on 10 different qualities of the person. And then everybody's subjective, everybody's biased, but combine them together, you can have more or less general picture. And I think all of us together are smarter than each of us individually. What collective smartness.
So what am I asking about the...
Usually, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, the how often? Usually it's once per 3 months.
Okay.
Every 3 months about that.
And then when do they get feedback on that? So what's the timeline when you receive all the answers? When are the conversations happening based on like, hey, this is what your teammates are saying?
We can send them like screenshots of like total answers individually if there's nothing to like dive deeper. But if we see that there's some problem, we probably will have one-on-one and give them more detailed feedback on like some specific skills that should be improved, for example. But also, for example, we measure like leadership. You shouldn't expect that everybody in the team going to be a leader. It's not going to be that great. Like you don't need that much leader, right? You need people who are able to take responsibility and take like ownership from their mistakes, but it's not necessary they need to be ambitious or something. It's totally fine if like you're a developer, not that ambitious. You don't need everyone be very ambitious or something. It's very individual.
This is something I'll be having a separate interview about, the career development or within the company. So I would love to know how are you looking at that? If you see that when you ask about the goals and ambitions of people, how do you help them grow? What are the options and opportunities there, especially if you're quite a flat in the hierarchy? So it means that you can't have a lot of managers just because they want to get somewhere higher. So that traditional corporate ladder doesn't really work. What are the alternatives that you have created there?
Well, surprisingly, again, not all people have ambitions. Some people want have comfort and stability, and that's more than enough for them. Not all people dream about like conquer the world. Some people just want stable, good life, and that's totally fine. I don't think that you should necessarily target that 100% of your company will be very ambitious. And also it's great if in the different stages of your company, you need different qualities in people. So for example, if you're starting from a very small company, if it's just a startup and you have like 3 or 4 people, yes, they should be very ambitious. They should be, you know, bright and willing to create something amazing. But then as you're growing, you will discover that not everybody's like that. And you don't need everybody to be like that. It's totally fine if people just doing their job and support the process that somebody built. So again, big part of CEO work is HR work. And I believe that good CEO, it's also good HR, especially on earlier stages, you creating culture. You creating culture by hiring people who and create this dynamic between them. This phrase that like a company is a mirror of the founders, I think it's very accurate.
For good and for bad.
That's the thing. Like, yeah, sometimes you look at the company and you don't even need to know founder. You know, it's just toxic.
And you probably know Stephen Bartlett, the Diary of CEO, and he talks about that the first 10 hires as a CEO or a startup founder are your most important ones, because those are the people who will be hiring further. And you need to really be unapologetic on the values that you want to have, because those 10 people will define the culture. Because beyond those 10, you might be involved in the process of hiring, but you will not drive it anymore. And those decisions will be made by someone else. And that's the most important part. Look at the values and the characteristics, the personality traits.
When I left my previous company, I left it with 120 employees. Right now, it's more close to 700 employees. And we never have HR. Like, we never had. It's not maybe good necessarily, but I tried and it just didn't work, because the thing that I pay attention, the thing that I see in people, it's not necessarily what HR see at people. And I understand that if I will allow them to build my company, it's just going to be someone's company. It's not going to be mine, because I see it. Like, I have this clear picture in my head how it's supposed to be, and the person's just not fitting in. So yeah, I guess like hiring, especially early on, it's something that you should not delegate.
So how were you doing it with 120 people? Were you still driving that process yourself?
Well, right now I have a chief executive over there, and I'm not involved on operation day to day anymore. The company that I'm talking about, it's the company that working on military supply in Ukraine, and they're doing a great job. Right now, it's more like they're giving more freedom to each specific department to figure out, does the person who they bring fitting with the group? And they also, sometimes when person did not match with the specific department, they can transfer him to another department, which is very funny, because the same person in one group can be very bad and underperform, and another setup, he just like started shining.
Fascinating. As you said about the gaming, that it's not about that people are by nature toxic. It's just the environment and the mismatch of people who interact with each other. And that's the same in the workplace.
The same with relationship, like with the different partners, like one partner can like literally like bring you down, and with another partner, you'll be a rock star and like the best version of yourself. And it's not just a person generally bad. Sometimes it is, but very often it's just a wrong person for you or like wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, definitely. I give this example to the students I'm teaching here of a wisdom of my mom, who when I was back in Ukraine and dating a guy, she commented once after my date with him that, hey, Anna, you like, in a good relationship, you need to be a better and feel better when you come from a date, not worse. And that's the thing. It was a good guy. There was nothing wrong with him per se. It was just a wrong match for me. It was just like he was triggering me. I was so bitchy with him and things like that. It just was unnecessary, but that's how it was working. And I really took it to my heart from my mom. And I do see it with my relationship now with my husband, that he definitely makes me a better person. And it's just because it's a good match, and we're working as a fantastic team together, and then everyone wins and it's just much healthier. But I'm sure that he would be like triggering some other girl the hell out of her, really. So it's really about finding that match and what you do so well in Game Tree for the gamers. I think that's what a lot of us can use in our personal lives, in our professional lives, building companies, building teams. All right, Anna, we talked about a lot of stuff. I still have a lot of questions to you, but maybe there will be part two at some point.
I would love to. It's a very interesting conversation. And I love how deep we went into each question.
Thanks for that feedback. I appreciate it. Tell us to wrap up, Forbes 30 under 30. How the hell do you get on that? And what does it mean to you personally and professionally?
How did I get in? I was applied by one of my co-founders. I didn't know about that. It was kind of a surprise. And then a month ago, they follow up and they say like, hey, we really look deeper into your persona and into your company. Can you answer more questions? And that was like a hell of a question, like big questioner. When they dive into everything, like my values, why I become an entrepreneur, what drives me, and a lot of other things. And I fulfill it. And they ask me about my photos and I applied. And that was like quiet. It was like 3 months ago. And that was nothing after that. And I'm like, okay. And like, what next? Like, that's it. It's just like they, I left confused right before yesterday morning when they published this list. And it was quite a big surprise for me. And I was quite shocked. What it means for me, A, it's a great recognition that we're doing something important, because very often, especially when you so laser focus on the problem that you're solving on the company, you can start doubting on like, do I even working something that matters? Do I even do something that's really important? And then when you get this recognition, you're like, yeah, like probably society do need this. And like other people say that it is important what we're doing here. And it's also helped you motivate team as well, because it's proof that people need what we're doing here and it's important. I don't see it as a big change for me personally, but I see that now with this, I can use this to make a bigger impact in the gaming industry in the right way. And it's very good for all industry to have more women that working on problems, that inspiring other women, that helping each other out, because gaming industry is still very male dominated. And there's been statistics that only about 27% of women work in gaming, which is not enough. And I have a great explanation for that. Like, you know, that historically the first developers was men. They created games that other men enjoy to play. And then it's created this loop that men create games for men that men only men enjoy. And then companies start like turning on business logic. Oh, if only men play games, why we should target women? They tried, they failed, because again, men try to create a games women would like on the way how they think that they would like it. And it just doesn't work this way. But woman is a half of population, and surprise for everyone, girls also like games. Okay. We do play games. And like sometimes, you know, when I say, oh, I work in gaming or I'm a gamer, and people like, you don't look like a gamer. And I'm like, what does it even mean? How is it supposed to look?
When what do they say? How are you supposed to look? Like, you're so pretty, Dana. Why are you in gaming? Why are you like avoiding the real life or what? What is that what they mean? Or
I don't know. I still didn't figure out how the gamer supposed to look like. I don't know. I'm sorry. I just look like this. Okay.
Don't apologize. All right. I really want to congratulate you with this achievement. I know that people sometimes look at that like, oh yeah, with those Forbes, whatever. But I do think what you said, it does put spotlight not on you, but on the idea and the mission that you have. And that is important for the industry. And ultimately, it's important for the society that people pay attention to what GameTree does. People might get more hope for gaming. Maybe they give it a try because they get to know that, okay, there is something, someone who is trying to make it more inclusive and for me to feel safer. So that is important. That,
you know, it's the same with like a charity. When you're doing something good, when you help somebody, it feels awkward and it feels like weird to show it off, because it's like, oh, why would I brag it? But it is very important for society to show that you're supporting something, because it's going to create the loop that, oh, it is important. Maybe I also should do this. So I'm personally encouraged, like everyone, you know, if you're doing something good, if you're doing something important, show it off. It is not for yourself, not to brag it on it, but to create this circle of goodness and encourage other people also to do it.
I can give a personal example. Me and my husband usually don't give Christmas presents to each other since, I don't know, 10 years ago. But together we donate some amount of money to Ukraine. And for a while it was an organization called Tvoya Opora, Your Support, that were providing different material support to the orphanages and hospitals. Then we did some other initiatives. And this Christmas, there was a guy on my LinkedIn network. I've never had any real-time chat with him, even, but we've chatted a bit in the messages, but then I've been following what he's doing. And he shared that he and his family decided to support through this organization that provides financial support, but also psychological and educational support to the kids of the veterans or of the soldiers who passed away or who died in the war. And that just resonated a lot with me and my husband, and we became donors for a year. So that you kind of support one kid and they ask for a year commitment. And that's the thing. And he, in his post, shared that I don't feel comfortable sharing that because I feel like someone might think it's bragging, but it's important for me to show that this organization exists and that we all can do something. And I was grateful to him because within a week, they got another donor as us and maybe someone else because he has quite an exposure. So that's the thing. We need to shine light. But as long as we do it, not light at us, but light at the idea that we are trying to bring to the world.
Yeah, we're part of it. That's what we're doing. And yeah, we should be proud of it.
Okay. To wrap up, anything that you want to leave with our listeners that we haven't covered yet? Maybe it's about business. Maybe it's about leadership or personal. Could be about supporting Ukraine, whatever you feel like.
Oh, supporting Ukraine resonates a lot, of course. I'm doing a lot of initiative to support tech in Ukraine, and I'm more than happy to any Ukrainian startup. If you need any help that I can provide, or if you hear something that can be helpful, and not just for Ukrainian startups, I believe that there's nothing like tech in this world changes the way how human civilization evolves. So I want to be part of this brightest future that I believe our human civilization can build. If you're on the same page, if whatever I say resonates with you and you think that I can be helpful, feel free to reach me out on LinkedIn and I will 100% respond to you. I'm very passionate about future and building projects that not exist and products that not exist and something that will improve humans' life. And I want to be helpful for... I'm still, you know, I started as a server in the army. I served and I still want to serve society and humanity to make this world better.
We can all do our part and it can be and can look very different.
Yeah. The small part together, like ants, you know, with small tiny pieces, but together we can do great things.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dana, for the conversation, for sharing. Just feels so warm and so good to talk to you. Really appreciate that. And to you, Genius Leaders, I want to remind you as always that I see you, I feel you, I love you. And I do believe that each of us can make a small contribution to making this world a better place. So go pick up the thing that you feel like this can be better and do a tiny, tiny baby, take a tiny baby step to yeah. Making it better today. Love you. Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Genius Leadership Podcast. If you enjoyed the conversation, hit the subscribe button. Please rate, review, and share to help more people discover the show and become the better leaders. For more conversations about living in your zone of genius, connect with me on LinkedIn. Genius Leadership is an honest conversation about leading yourself and others, and it is my honor to be your guide in overcoming everything.